How can we experience life-changing, powerful sexual healing while we're single? Stay tuned to the Deeper Dating Podcast as I interview sex therapist Mike Moran.
If you've ever been disillusioned, disappointed, or discouraged in your search for love, and you know there has to be a better way to find the healthy, soul-filling love you've always longed for, then you've discovered the podcast for you. I know, as Ken's work personally has led me to find the love of my life. So here's your host of Deeper Dating, Ken Page.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Deeper Dating Podcast. I'm Ken Page, and I'm a psychotherapist, the author of the book Deeper Dating, the co-founder of the meeting site deeperdating.com, and of course, the host of this show. I am so excited today because I am interviewing a dear friend who is also a brilliant sex therapist. And Mike Moran is going to be talking to us about how we can experience and create sexual healing before we're in a relationship. This week and every week, I'm going to share with you the greatest skills I know to help you find love and keep it flourishing and heal your life in the process, because the skills of dating are nothing more than the skills of love, and the skills of love are the greatest skills of all for a happy and meaningful life. And if you want to learn more about the Deeper Dating path to real intimacy, just go to deeperdatingpodcast.com. You can sign up for my mailing list. You'll get free gifts and you can get transcripts of each of these episodes, including this one. I also want to say that everything I share in this podcast is educational in nature. It is not medical or psychiatric advice or treatment. And if you're experiencing any serious psychological symptoms, please seek professional help. And finally, if you like what you're learning here, it would be a wonderful thank you if you subscribed and left me a review on iTunes or elsewhere. So thank you so much for that. And without any further ado, I want to introduce my dear friend and deeply respected colleague, Mike Moran. So let me tell you a little bit about Mike, why I'm so excited to have him on this show. Mike is an LCSW and a psychotherapist, a certified EFT couples therapist and supervisor, a certified sex therapist, and a certified inner bonding facilitator based in New York, where he specializes at the intersection of relational and sexual challenges. He's the founder and director of the Center for Relational Fulfillment, and he's on the board of directors of the New York Center for Emotionally Focused Therapy. Mike also presents internationally training therapists on sexual issues in EFT, couples therapy, and he's also taught graduate courses in marriage and family therapy and LGBTQ practice at Rutgers University. And he offers weekend workshops to couples. And Mike says that he views erotic energy as chi, meaning life force or creative vitality, and loves helping people remove the barriers to creating authentic, passionate connection emotionally and sexually. And you can learn more about his work by going to fulfilledcouples.com. I know Mike for decades. We've worked together many times, and you will get this quality of goodness and decency and intelligence and clarity and integrity and smarts that he emanates, which is why it's just such a joy for me to have him on the show. So welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you for that introduction. I feel all warm inside.
Well, it's all true about you. So glad to have you here, because this is just such an important topic that doesn't get talked about enough. And single people who are not yet in a relationship don't know the tools that are available to them to grow in their sexuality and their sexual healing while they're dating and before they're in the committed relationship that they're searching for. The way I would love to start is with you just telling us anything about your story and what led you here.
Sure. So I think, you know, on a fundamental level, sex, erotic energy has always been very important to me. I am a sexual person. I really honor that energy, and I feel like it's been an integral component to my own healing. I was born with a birth defect that impacted my sex life. So I was in sex therapy as a young man, as a single, you know, gay young man in my 20s. And it really changed my life. So that really awakened me to the power of sexual energy and how if we do our work, it can really enliven us. I say in the bio, you know, I think of erotic energy, sexual energy as chi, as life force. And for so many of us, that energy has been dampened, right? It's been tainted by many things. So I help folks liberate that.
That is beautiful and powerful. And can you tell us more about how you do that? What is the journey? And for listeners as well, what's the journey that they can take as they learn from you as we speak?
Yeah, so I've worked with many, many people over the years, straight, gay, transgender, gender fluid, who really have recognized in themselves that they sense that this wonderful energy, this wonderful life force that lives within them has been tainted and so has been dampened down. And so we really do, we go on a journey together to learn about how their sexuality, how their sexual energy, their eros emerged in their body, how it lives in their body, how it came of being, and then how it lives in their body now, and how the myths, the messages, you know, our culture, I don't care if you're straight, gay, what have you, the culture at large, mainstream culture can do a real number on us. And we ingest these, it's like toxins, we ingest these negative beliefs and messages and myths about sex that can really do a number on us and that can just hijack our capacity to really let that energy flow in us. So, you know, that's one of the questions I ask the folks that I work with, right? What toxins have you swallowed in the culture at large, in your family culture, right? What lives within you that perhaps you and I can help release? Get that poison out of there.
That is so beautiful and powerful. And let's have a moment so that all of the audience could think about this. Maybe you even want to take out a paper and pen, or maybe you're walking or driving and you want to pause this and think about it. But this is a powerful question. And you're saying, Mike, it's the very first question. It's where you start on this journey. So let's all do this for a minute. Let's just sit with this question that Mike just asked. Mike, can I ask you to ask it once more, and then we'll give people a minute to think or to pause and reflect on it?
Sure, of course. What toxins have you swallowed that are living in your body from the culture at large, from your family, from your friends, right? What lives in your body that isn't authentically you? What messages? What poisons do you need to release to really come to embrace a healthy, loving, powerful model of sexuality?
Beautiful, beautiful. And here's something I want to say that I'm going to ask you to address in a minute, Mike, which is for those listeners who have experienced real sexual trauma, this could be a very triggering question. So feel free to answer this in a brief and general way and not to dive in, to be aware of what triggers you and to take care of yourself in the process of answering this question. You might want to answer it on a very, very broad level. Stand as far away from the trauma as you need to be able to look at it, even if it's from 10 miles back, and just getting a really kind of a safe view of it. So I just wanted to put that in for people who've experienced trauma, because it's a rich and important question we all should be able to ask. It doesn't really have words. It's a feeling of shame that I feel goes deep, deep, deep inside my being, kind of to the point of curling my toes and my fingers. It's a sense of shame, and it's a deep belief. Goodness is really important to me, and it's a deeply imprinted belief that sex and goodness are antithetical. So that's a myth that I've spent my life working to deal with. But I just wanted to share mine because it's such a beautiful question. And I wanted to kind of model a little bit about answering that question.
That's beautiful, Ken. Yeah, shame. I've worked a lot with shame, as I'm sure you have, you know, personally and, you know, in my work with folks. Shame is a big one, isn't it? It can really hijack our ability to own our truth in our lives. It can just shut us down. And what's the underbelly of that? What's going on there? What have we taken in, right? What have we taken in that we haven't released yet? You know, that is not us, but it's in us.
Well said. So asking this question and articulating even more fully what the words are to that shame would kind of be a next step?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. To really slow things down and learn about how did that, where did, you know, you weren't born with that shame inside you. Something happened, right? Something happened there and it came of being, right? What happened there? What's the story of how shame began to really take over your experience of your sexuality, if indeed that's occurring?
Beautiful, beautiful. And I know there are more questions, Mike, and I have a choice point question for you. What this is bringing up for me is all the people who are listening who have experienced sexual trauma and violation. I think I would like to pause and just hear any insights, because this is huge, and it was one of the questions I was going to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
What about if you could just address for folks those of us who have experienced sexual abuse or sexual trauma and have the deep, deep, deep trauma reverberations inside our being? How do people in that situation, just any thoughts you want to share about the healing journey around that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was really glad that you added that, Ken, because, you know, trauma, I've worked a lot with sexual trauma. I can talk about a case I'm working with, a person I'm working with right now. But the first thing I would say with this is, in order for us to really open to our trauma, we have to feel safe enough to do that, right? So if you're working on your own and beginning to open that box, pay attention to what's happening for you. Pay attention to your body. Sometimes memories just have been kind of stored in there and then they start to emerge. I've worked with folks where that's, you know, that's been the case. If you find yourself really feeling that your trauma has really limited you and you want to do the work of, you know, washing it out, go slow.
Mm.
Be gentle. Learn about, as you open to what happened, learn about how then your response to what happened. I'll tell you, I worked with a woman who had been date raped in college, and it was interesting in that she, after it happened, she just kind of repressed it. She repressed the whole thing. She pushed it down. She forgot about it. She was pretty promiscuous in college afterwards, and we wondered if that was a component, right? The trauma was playing out on some level. But anyway, it reemerged. It's interesting, after she got married, and she had had a satisfying sex life with her partner, but about a year into the marriage, her body just shut down.
Mm.
And the trauma came up in, you know, front and center, and her body just completely shut down. I worked with her for about a year where, you know, and I'd had the partner come in sometimes. And the key through working through that abuse, now she had an awesome husband. I love this guy. He was great. But the key was helping her really open to that she's in control, right? That she's the one. That she gets to decide about her body.
Mm.
She holds the reins. Nobody else holds the reins around her sexuality, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's very healing work.
So since safety is the first order of business for many people working on trauma, it is good to get help, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Especially with trauma, because it can be, it's overwhelming. Remember, trauma occurs in relationship. Trauma is healed in relationship. So I really encourage folks who've really had to deal with that to get help.
And here's another question. And that question is, if trauma can be healed in relationship, How can it be healed? And this is not in any way to discount the importance of therapy and of doing trauma work, not at all to discount that. But if trauma can be healed through relationship, how can trauma be healed through your relationship with yourself? Let's say you're a single person. You're not having sex. Maybe you're having sex occasionally with people that you date. Maybe you're having recreational sex. Maybe you're just masturbating and wanting to do your healing work in that. Could you just share thoughts in addition to, or on the side of, or even instead of therapy? What are ways that people can heal sexual trauma and sexual wounding in their relationship with themselves before they're in a partnership?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I relate to it. I think I did a lot of my healing as a single person.
Me too. I have talked a lot about being in a support group for chronically single psychotherapists, and Mike was one of my support group members. We were in this together.
We were.
Yes, yes, yes. It was very healing for us.
Definitely, definitely, absolutely. I love that group. Yeah, I would say the first step, if you're going to work on this on your own, right, is do the work on every level. So there's the mind, right? That's what we talked about, the myths, the messages. Do that work, really understand how it lives in your body from an insight perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And then also get to know your body. If you had trauma, how does the trauma impact your relationship to your body, right? How do you feel about your body? I'm working with a gentleman right now who's had major, major trauma. I gave him an exercise. Just lay naked. Just lay naked on your bed and notice sensations of what's happening. Just slow down. And a lot emerged for him
because he
had never really thought to do that before, right? A lot emerged for him. So I would encourage you to slow things down and just get to know what goes on inside your head, what goes on inside your body, what's your relationship to your body. Just do your best to keep a deep sense of curiosity, right? Not just noticing it all.
What a powerful, beautiful, and simple exercise for reflection.
Yeah, it can be very powerful. The other thing that you can do that I encourage you to do is all of us have what we call an erotic blueprint, right? All of us have our own unique algorithm that allows our sexuality to come alive, right? That allows our sensual sexual energy to come alive, right? There's more direct stimulation, right? There's the senses, our sensuality. And then there's more psychogenic, what we call psychogenic, which is thoughts, feelings, fantasies, what have you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do some exploration around what's your erotic blueprint? How does your sexual energy begin to hum? I ask folks, you know, how does your erotic engine get turned on and humming? What happens there?
Beautiful.
Get deeply curious because you know what? We're all a little different in that place. We're all a little different.
That's wonderful. That's really wonderful. That's something I talk about too in my book, like different components of that are what moves you in sex, what emotionally moves you, what makes you feel safe, and what really just turns you on. And holding all of those together is just, you know, that's the rich place. That's the wonderful place.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I just want to share, Mike, that the genesis of this episode is you and I were in a cafe together maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And I don't know if you remembered this, but I remembered it so vividly. We're sitting there drinking our iced coffee together. And I asked you, in your work as a sex therapist, at this point, what's exciting you the most? And what you said was just so beautiful and powerful to me. So I'd like you to just speak about that a little bit, and I'll say what that was. This is what you said to me.
Yeah, tell me, because I don't remember.
I will tell you, and it was awesome. It was really awesome. It opened a vista, a whole new vista of pathways to healing and possibility. So this is what you said. You said, this is what really interests me. no matter how traumatized someone might be that I am working with, there's a zone that they can go into where they can be sexual and feel good inside and feel unblocked and unfettered. There's a circuitry that they can go into where, like, things work for them, even if they've been really traumatized. And even if a great amount of the time they can't do that, there are times when it's smooth sailing. They are just in alignment with themselves. And I'm fascinated by what it is that allows that to happen.
What it is that allows them to drop into that groove where they can celebrate their sexuality in such a satisfying way.
Yeah. So tell us what you have learned about what helps people, no matter what, be able to drop into that groove.
I think a real component is the yearning to do it, the motivation to do it, the persistence to keep learning about what are the barriers? What are the barriers to you claiming your unique, beautiful version to your sexual energy? You know, I've worked with folks with all kinds of fetishes. For so many of us, they grow up in a culture that denigrates anything that is other.
Yes.
Right? It just shuts us down before we even know that we're shutting it down. And I've worked with many of the fetishes, the adult diaper community. I've worked with folks where in puppy play, which is your eros, your erotic energy comes alive through primarily portraying an animal, what have you. Human experience, the mind, the nervous system, what, all of it, it's so rich. It's so rich. So I think with that, those of us who are willing to move beyond the confines of this world that we live in that tells us that we're not allowed to be ourselves and however, you know, whatever's going on in there, those of us who have the chutzpah to move beyond that, I think that's the impetus to be able to link into that groove. Can you allow yourself to be your erotic self in all its glory, whatever that is, however that begins to come alive within you?
Gorgeous.
Right? I think that's the underbelly of it all. And many, 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 many people, including myself, you know, many, many of us have real feelings about claiming that truth. Right? And that borrows back to the myths, the messages, the stuff that we've taken in that we have to, you know, we have to move, that we have to release, we have to throw, vomit out.
And this is so great because this is work that everyone, no matter where they are in the spectrum of single to committed couplehood, can do. Every one of us can do this. And if you do it now before you're in a relationship, it'll save you a great deal of grief and allow you a great deal more of happiness. So this is a wonderful time to be doing that work. So Mike, the first thing you talked about so richly was naming the myths that we've swallowed our sexual freedom that block us from being who we can be sexually. And now you've talked about naming your algorithm, acknowledging what really kind of brings you to the place where your heart is alive and your eros is alive and you're turned on and your engine is humming. And I love that. And can you frame that for the audience as a question that we can all sit with for a moment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Let me put it this way, which actually borrows back to Jack Moran's work, which is amazing. His work is amazing. Think about it this way. Let's say you're not turned on at all. You're not turned on at all, right? You're not feeling erotic at all, but you would like to be, but you would like to be, right? What are the thoughts, feelings, images, fantasies? What's all that you know would be the best bet to help you come alive there, to help your erotic portal open and for you to move into that altered state of eros coming, you know, really coming alive in you? What are all the factors that come into play there? And then what is it about all of those qualities? What is it about those that make it so inviting, that make it so enticing? Let's kind of ponder that for a moment.
Beautiful. Such rich, wonderful stuff. Thank you, Mike. This is great.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So was there more you wanted to say there, or should I jump to my next question?
No, I think we're good. Jump to your next. Keep jumping, Ken.
I'm jumping, baby. Okay. So I want to ask about, and this is like a huge, huge range, and I'm going to like say them all in this one question, but feel free to kind of like separate them. What about people who have shame about organic conditions of any sort, who are single and feel scared of entering into a relationship or even the dating world because of shame around disabilities, things in their sexual anatomy, scarring, STDs like herpes, any of these kind of things that could make people feel, oh, I just, you know, no, this really takes me out of the game.
Yeah, well, you're talking my language because I have a birth defect that, you know, this is exactly what my journey was. And it's because I, you know, I really value sexual energy that I did this work. I think the key is with that is do your best to let go of seeing your disability, your scarring, your STD, your herpes. Do your best to let go of framing it as this is my illness, this is where I'm damaged, this is my defectiveness. Do your best, soften the gaze and begin, try to see it through the lens of this is the body that I was meant to explore, that I was meant to have on this journey of embracing my sexual truth. That in fact, it's actually, this was part of it. Try to see it as a component of your journey. Try to shift the lens from it being a deficit to more of an attribute of your unique journey.
Wow. Did you do that, Mike?
I have done that. Yeah. I have really crossed the bridge in that capacity, and it's been really very powerful. But it's hard, right? It's not a one conversation thing. That's a journey, right?
Yes, yes. I just want to say something about this journey concept, because I guess when we look at ourselves and our defects, whatever they are glaring and obvious and embarrassing, and we feel like, how would anyone be turned on to me? Or maybe we even feel like, well, I wouldn't be turned on to me. And all of these thoughts that are just kind of crushing, just really crushing. The question you asked was not as simple as how are these parts of me just fine, just beautiful, but how is this actually part of my authentic sexual journey of claiming my sexuality? That's a shift, and that's very profound. And thank you so much for sharing, you know, something so personal with us, because then everyone who's dealing with that can say, he knows what he's talking about. He's been through it.
Yeah, it's developing the capacity to own it, but from a place of empowerment, right? Versus a place of shame and trying to cover it up, trying to pretend, you know, that it's not there, or foreclosing on your dating or sexual journey because you just can't imagine, you know, all really giving into fear versus claiming it as a component of your journey, of your life that is meant to be there for you to learn from. You know, I mean, ultimately, I see all of life as a classroom. It's all a classroom.
Yeah.
We have to embrace, you know, what we've got, what we've been given.
Mike, this is just so beautiful, so rich. And I have some more questions for you.
Sure.
Okay. So what about people who've been chronically single, hand up, for a really, really long time and want to get out into the dating world and are just afraid and feel rusty with dating?
You know, I mean, as Ken, you shared, right? We were in our chronically single therapist group.
Yes.
Right? I think what I would say with that, you know where I come from that? I think about how I tortured myself about that. And so I labeled myself, right? I used it as an identity. I'm chronically single. And I've been partnered now for 13 years. And I look back at the young man that, you know, I did that to my, I tortured myself. I used that label to like torture myself. Mm. And I think the first step is, you know what? So you've been single for a long time. That's all it means. You've been single for a long time. It doesn't mean you're defective. It doesn't mean you're broken. It doesn't mean, you know, that nobody is ever going to want to date you. All it means is that you've been single for a long time. That's all it means. You've been single for a long time. Don't take that like Ken and I did and, you know, run with that and torture yourself with it. That's all it is. It's just data. It's information. Yeah, you've been single for a long time, right? What's your next step? What's your next step toward taking a risk, right? Right? Taking a risk and getting out there again. If you want an internet date, great. If you don't, great. You want to take a class, take a, you know, I had a client who met her partner in a Italian class. She took an Italian class and ended up meeting her partner, right? What's your next step? And seeing it through the lens of this again, I keep coming back to this word journey, don't I?
Yeah.
Do your best not to focus on this destination of where is my partner, but to see it as a journey of moving toward this person. I remember, and it is true, it's such a cliche when they talk about it, it comes out of nowhere, what have you. But it really is true. When I met my partner at a at Big Apple Ranch, which is a gay square dance in the middle of Manhattan. I remember the night so well because it was all I could do not to cancel. If I hadn't promised my friend to meet him at this thing, I would never have gone. I remember getting into the shower and being like, oh my God, why am I going to this thing? I don't even like country music. I was just so, I just was not there. But I showed up. I showed up and my partner was there and I've been with him for 13 years. So you just don't know. You just have to just keep taking the next step and do your best to not frame it from a negative place.
You know, Mike, I'm smiling because I actually quote you all the time in my classes and my courses without mentioning who you are. This is another thing that relates to that, because when you were searching, or maybe it was when you first met Steve, but I think it was when you were searching, and I said to you, so like, what are you doing now that's different? And you said, Ken, I'll tell you just what I'm doing. I get home from work. And the last thing I want to do in the world is take a shower and get dressed and go out. Like, it literally makes me feel sick to my stomach. But I know that if I don't do that and go to events where there are spiritual gay men, I will never find my partner. And I quote you on that all the time.
Because that's exactly what happened when I met Steve. I'm telling you, I remember getting into the shower like, I can't believe I'm dragging my butt up 7th Avenue. And I lived in the West Village at the time. That I think I remember that walk of dragging myself into that building. But it's true. We have to get in the ring, don't we?
We have to get in the ring. And the ring also includes doing the rich sexual questioning and mining of treasures that you are describing. So I have another question for you. I want to talk about like the whole issue of hooking up. This is a show for people who are really into the conscious search for love. And so we don't really talk that much about hooking up. And I think people might feel like, you know, I think many people here don't do that. And I think that there are also many people who do that and wonder how they feel about it and wonder if it's a good thing to do. And I just would like to hear, I'd like us to just talk for a few minutes about this issue of like, this conscious journey of healing, if your commitment is toward healing and you're single and you want sex, how to hold this issue of hooking up? I'd love to hear any of your thoughts.
Sure. Well, firstly, I just want to preface this by saying, you know, I'm a sex positive sex therapist. And what I mean by that is if the sex is consensual, respectful, and safe, and everybody in the room, regardless of how many people are in the room or having pleasure, if everyone is having pleasure, then rock and roll. I don't judge any of that. Now, that said, if you're recognizing that who you are in that context, your behavior, what you're doing, if you are starting to get those inner promptings of this is not really reflective of my deepest truth, this is not really reflective of who I want to be, this is not my wisest self that's doing that. And so you're wanting to deepen into, so what is my wisest self with respect to the challenging conundrum of being a sexual being? And, you know, some of us have very high sex drives, right? And being single and needing that release, needing that outlet, right? Trust me, I very much empathize with that. That said, if you're really feeling like, this is not who I want to be here, do some exploration. What is the part of you that's doing the hooking up, right? What is this? What is that part wanting? What's going on there, right? Do your best to open to compassion, right? We heal through compassion, not judgment. So do your best to soften the gaze, right? Let the critical, you know, inner critic, critical wounded part of you, ask him or her to kind of step outside for a moment and do some compassionate learning about, so what's happening in this place, right? What's going on? There's the part that is doing something here. There's the part that is acting in a way that's not in alignment with who you want to be. And so you want to just get curious, partner with this part of you, learn about what's going on there. It may be that it feels better to, you know, hook up and to engage in casual sex in a way that ultimately doesn't feel right to you, but maybe it's serving you because it's helping you not feel more vulnerable feelings. Maybe it's helping you to distract yourself from feelings that otherwise would be knocking on your door. So, you know, what I say with that is just get curious, slow down and learn about it. And whatever you do, don't beat yourself up. There's always good reasons for why this stuff plays out the way it does.
Beautiful. Thank you, Mike. And I so agree with you. It's really important that even when we are acting in ways that might be not great for us sexually, that we still hold the beauty of our sexuality and remember that first and primarily.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful. And Mike, you've shared so many rich, wonderful things. And I guess like one thing that I've really appreciated is you have articulated all of these kind of thorny and important and highly charged issues as a journey that we can be kind to ourselves around and curious and exploratory, which is what I love about your work and why I so wanted to have you on the show.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, no, I'm glad you picked up on that, Ken. It's a fundamental tenet of how I work with folks, and I help them open to their journey through the eyes of compassion, not judgment.
Right. And you have been through that journey, and we are all on that journey.
We are indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, Mike, we're moving toward closing now, and in a minute, I'm going to ask you to talk about how people could get in touch with you and reach out and find out more about your work and take part in it, if they're moved to do that. But first, are there any last closing words that you want to share with this community?
You know, Ken, I think, and this really borrows back to what we touched on earlier in our conversation, but I think what I want to emphasize is erotic energy, sexual energy, it is powerful. It's a beautiful, beautiful energy. It's a healing energy. It's vitality. It's aliveness. It's such an awesome part of living on this planet. And as we all well know, you know, living on this planet can be challenging, but it's like anything, right? It can be used in the service of our, you know, the best parts of ourselves, or it can be used in the service of, you know, these wounded parts. And so I think the key is to really honor the energy, honor how powerful it is, honor, you know, its role in your life, because of course, that looks differently for everybody, but to respect it because it's a beautiful, beautiful part of living, in my opinion.
Mike, that's wonderful. And I just want to acknowledge you and all the other folks in the world who are brave adventurers in exploring sexual healing, because it still is so taboo and limited in this world and in this country. So this is a statement of gratitude for all the people working on sex and sexuality in the world, and to you in particular. So for everyone who wants to explore this more fully, some of the things that Mike talked about, who want to learn from him, hear more about what he's doing, what he believes in, what he's studying, what he's teaching, how can people find out everything about you, Mike?
Sure. Just go to my website. It's www.fulfilledcouples.com. And if you want to email me directly, my email is mike@fulfilledcouples.com. That's the easiest way.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, Mike, I can't thank you enough for your years of loyal and wonderful friendship, for the work that you're doing in the world, and for sharing this with us.
Oh, likewise, Ken. I remember us doing the retreats back in the day where I would do the music, and we've had a rich journey together.
That's really true. Mike's a musician and a songwriter, by the way, as well.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And you can go to deeperdatingpodcast.com to sign up for my mailing list. And I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Just a reminder that at this point, I'm only doing episodes every 2 weeks for the time being. So see you then. And thank you so much. And thank you, Mike, once again.
Thank you. Thanks, Ken.
And that's it for today's episode of Deeper Dating. Be sure to go to deeperdatingpodcast.com as Ken has a few more gifts for you. Then join us on the next episode.